This is NBC Nightly News, Friday, June 15th, reported by John Chancellor with David Brinkley's Journal.
Good evening. On the program tonight, we'll have pictures of President Nixon on the road in Pekin, Illinois. We'll also see Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev having a chat with American reporters in Moscow before leaving for Washington. And we'll be covering some new anti-automobile pollution proposals which could change the way many Americans live their lives. Mr. Nixon's trip today took him to the hometown of Everett McKinley Dirksen, the late leader of the Senate Republicans, Pekin, Illinois. The president and Senator Dirksen's widow unveiled the cornerstone of a new research center named in Dirksen's memory. Here's more on that story from John Cochran.
The president arrived with congressional leaders and Illinois politicians. Senator Charles Percy said he and the president have resolved some of their well-publicized differences over Mr. Nixon's handling of Watergate. The presidential party then drove the 14 miles from Peoria to Pekin. On the way, Mr. Nixon let himself be engulfed by a crowd. This is only the second really public appearance the president has made since Watergate at the White House in April. He has chosen his outings carefully. Last week, graduation ceremonies at a conservative southern college. Today, the dedication of a research center named for the late Senate Republican leader, Everett McKinley Dirksen. The vice chairman of the Senate Watergate Committee, Howard Baker, was present. Baker was Senator Dirksen's son-in-law. In his speech, the president said he hoped to improve his ragged relations with Congress. Mr. Nixon also defended his new 60-day price freeze, thereby answering congressional critics who want him to impose an across-the-board 90-day wage price freeze. Then the president turned to Watergate without mentioning it by name.
We live in a time when many people are cynical about politics and politicians. Such times have occurred before. In this profession, as in any, there is much that could be improved. But there is also very much to admire. And it would be a tragedy if we allowed the mistakes of a few to obscure the virtues of most who are in the profession of politics. Or if we let our disappointment with some aspects of the system to turn into despair with the system as a whole. The American system is working, and we can be proud of that system. The way to make it work better is to bring more good people into it.
Obviously pleased with his reception here, the president now goes back into virtual seclusion at his Key Biscayne villa, where he and Henry Kissinger will prepare for next week's vitally important summit talks with Soviet Party leader Brezhnev. This is John Cochran, NBC News, with the president in Illinois.
There was one Watergate news item today which may be of interest to the White House. Senator Sam Ervin, chairman of the Watergate Investigation Committee, told reporters in Chicago that he hopes President Nixon will not be called as a witness and that so far he sees no necessity to call the president. Ervin did say that former Attorney General John Mitchell will be called as a witness in the very near future.
Jim, when you were completely gray, you did look older. I can't believe how much better you look with just a touch of gray.
Announcing Grecian Formula 16. It's practically clear. As easy to use as hair tonic. No mess. Use it every day until you slowly, gradually get rid of just as much gray as you want. Some of it, or all of it. Then once a week or so to keep it that way.
I use it too, and he doesn't even know it.
Grecian Formula 16.
Pepto-Bismol presents Famous Last Brags.
They don't make no mustard too hot for me. I got a cast-iron stomach.
Everybody in Martin has got an upset stomach but me.
Pile it on, Ma. I could eat a horse. I had four hot Pepper Heroes and a cupcake on a five-minute coffee break.
No matter what upsets your stomach, Pepto-Bismol helps. It comes between the upset and the stomach.
Oh, that's better.
It must have been the cupcake.
The government said today very firmly that it intends to have clean air in the United States, and that to get clean air, it's going to break up the love affair between the average American and his car and force him to ride mass transit instead, because more than half of the air pollution Americans have to live with comes from cars. Today, the Environmental Protection Agency proposed measures for 13 urban areas which would limit gasoline sales, cut taxicab cruising, cut building of parking facilities, ban downtown parking, and set aside special lanes for buses only. Peter Hackus has the story from Washington.
After 2.5 years of planning and delay, the Environmental Protection Agency announced approval of pollution controls, which will clean up cars and cut down the amount they are used, making it harder in some areas to drive them into town and then to find a place to park.
We are basically attacking this problem by asking people to change their habits, their long-standing and intimate relation to the private automobile. This is a fundamental change, but it's the only one that will fundamentally work. The average guy who drives his own car to work, if he tries to drive it today, or under any one of these, under a typical plan, would first discover that the road he's traveling to get to work is pretty congested, because there are a couple of lanes reserved on that road for carpools and buses. Then when he got to the city, he'd discover that he couldn't park on the street, and that he'd have to park in a parking garage, where the price has gone up, either because of supply-demand or because there is a parking tax surcharge of several dollars per car per day imposed on that parking garage. That man, hopefully, would then decide that a better way to get to work is to join a carpool or ride a bus.
Fry said he realizes that the proposed regulations may present a serious hardship to city motorists. He said that may not be what Congress had intended, and that Congress may decide to ease up on certain regulations to make them less drastic. Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
If two of those proposals are carried out to the letter, they could all but eliminate the automobile in Los Angeles and cut traffic in New Jersey by two-thirds. The people in those areas live by the automobile, and the effect on their lives would be profound.
New Jersey has the heaviest automobile traffic of any state. Motorists travel 28 billion miles a year in the 9 northern counties that are the suburbs of New York City. The federal government says that the only way to meet federal clean air standards by 1975 in this area, even if all other pollution sources are brought under control, is to cut down on driving. This traffic is blamed for the New York metropolitan area smog. Car exhaust is cooked by sunlight into the haze that makes eyes smart and lungs strain. But any restriction on car use in this area to make breathing easier will make life harder for the people who live here.
I need a car. I have a lot of children. I do shopping, doctor, whatever. I live in the suburbs. I'd have to move to a city, which would be offensive also.
But the Federal Environmental Protection Administration is convinced that New Jersey can't have both clean air and unlimited traffic. The government hopes the state will act and that the public will cut down voluntarily on driving. If these things don't happen, the government has the Clean Air Act and the power to make them happen. Robert Potts, NBC News, Weehawken, New Jersey.
The problem in Los Angeles is the same as in New Jersey. Too much pollution caused by too many cars. Here, one car for every two people. The EPA's most drastic solution to all this is a sharp restriction of gasoline sales. Within 4 years, motorists would be able to purchase only a fifth of what they are now using. Local government officials say this would paralyze the city and bring economic chaos. The current gas shortage already has given Southern Californians a taste of this, and they don't like it. The EPA's Los Angeles plan also calls for special freeway lanes for buses and carpools by the end of this year. A few of these already are operating on an experimental basis, but handle only a fraction of the traffic. The federal agency proposes an immediate ban on the construction of new parking lots. The theory is that people won't drive if they don't have a place to park. They could end up driving more, looking for a parking space. The EPA's proposal would put a damper on the current motorcycle boom. A ceiling on motorcycle registrations would be set at the 1973 level. The EPA is telling people in Los Angeles they'll have to make some drastic changes in their car-oriented lifestyles if there is to be clean air. It isn't likely they'll accept that voluntarily, so enforcement of the restrictions may turn out to be the EPA's biggest headache of all. John Marshall, NBC News, Los Angeles.
In short, these new rules could mean big changes in the lives of millions of people in the United States. David Brinkley's journal tonight is about these changes.
A person reaching somewhere around middle age often finds that, at last, he can afford to buy all of the rich and fancy foods he likes, only to discover that, for the sake of his health, he can't eat much. Well, as a country, we are reaching the middle-aged affluence where the American people can buy 11 million new cars in 1 year, only now to find that for the sake of their health, they can't drive them much. Some vision of the future can be seen in today's federal plans for cleaning the air in the big cities. Their purpose simply is to keep cars out of downtown and to force people to ride buses and subways. Those accustomed to driving downtown may feel that, until now, talking against pollution was nice, that it meant new sewer plants throwing no more beer cans at the roadside and factories cleaning their smokestacks, no major inconvenience for any individual. But how about standing and waiting at the bus stop on a cold day in the rain while a car, or maybe two cars, sits at home empty? If all these new rules and regulations take effect and can be enforced, the present adult generation of Americans will be the last able to live this way, able to have cars weighing 5,000 pounds, to drive to work, drive home, and park at both ends, using unlimited electricity and oil, and using up more of everything than any people in the history of the world. Saving the environment has seemed to be a fine idea, and something the politicians and industrialists should take care of for us. But standing at the bus stop in the rain while a car stays home is something else.
Boy, get just a few pounds overweight and you feel like you're dragging around a ball and chain. The whole world feels uncomfortable. You don't make those graceful moves like you used to. And the fact that you aren't the only one doesn't make it any better. Let the Special K breakfast help you. It tastes great, but it's less than 240 calories, 99% fat-free. If you exercise and eat this smart at every meal, you could lose that extra weight. And the Special K breakfast is a great start.
Century Fund, a mutual fund company investing for long-term growth. If this kind of investment fits your financial planning, send for a free prospectus.
The second Vietnam ceasefire since January began today, and it began very much like the first, with fighting. South Vietnam reported more than 20 violations by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong. The other side has, as yet, made no accusations of its own. Leonid Brezhnev, the Soviet Communist Party leader, flies to the United States tomorrow for summit talks with President Nixon. The visit to the United States will be Brezhnev's first visit. In Moscow yesterday, Brezhnev did something he's never done before. He held his first news conference with American reporters, and Robert Hager was there.
For nearly 2 days, American correspondents in Moscow had been given to understand that something was up. But when the summons to the Kremlin came, there was little more than an hour's warning. 11 U.S. reporters were led behind the walls and into the Council of Ministers building, seat of power in the Soviet Union. Secretary Brezhnev shook the hand of each reporter. He apologized for not having received the press before and said jokingly he'd read there was a sort of a mysterious unknown drifting over the Kremlin. Brezhnev took reporters on a tour. First, his reception room, where he said Politburo members hang around and trade jokes before their meetings. Brezhnev's large private office, where he said he spends much of his life working what he called terrible hours. A portrait of Lenin looked down from the wall. At Brezhnev's work desk, two telephones, one for international calls, one for domestic. A board full of buttons to put him instantly in touch with any of the different Politburo members. Finally, the room where the Politburo meets once a week. He said the Politburo might be compared to Congress, except its discussions usually end in consensus instead of a vote. Brezhnev said Russians place a slightly different meaning on the word discussion. Brezhnev said he wouldn't call this a press conference, but a conversation with reporters. It turned out to be mostly a rambling monologue with four or five questions over a couple of hours' time. Of detente, Brezhnev said an opinion poll of the world would show the vast majority want nothing better than a lasting, durable peace, and will be gratified if the American summit leads to further understanding. On Jewish emigration from Russia, Brezhnev swore there was no Jewish problem in the Soviet Union. Then I asked Brezhnev about Watergate.
Господин генеральный секретарь, вы знаете, что много писали о том, что дело Watergate-ское дело в США в результате этого дела.
Brezhnev said it was a domestic U.S. affair and would be indecent of him to bring it up with the president. Brezhnev said it had never entered his mind whether the president had lost or gained by Watergate. He certainly wasn't going to bring any pressure in his negotiations with the president because of the Watergate affair. When Brezhnev wound it up, it was nearly 10:30 at night. He'd spent 3 1/4 hours with the American press, and he said he still had another hour and a half of office work that night as he prepared for the U.S. summit. Robert Hager, NBC News, Moscow.
In Western Europe, the NATO countries today endorsed President Nixon's call for a renewal of the Atlantic Alliance, and in turn, the United States assured them it will not pull out any troops before East-West talks on troop levels. In the Sudan, a scheduled hearing for 8 Black September members charged with killing the American ambassador and 2 other diplomats was postponed indefinitely today.
Atlas, the tour's here.
Look at
wow.
That. Oh, yeah. My.
Okay, take us up. Atlas stands for tires built with the strength of Atlas.
What deep tread.
Built strong for long mileage.
Why all these grooves?
Good traction on wet roads.
That's a tough tire.
Tough to help protect you against road hazards.
Where do I buy them?
At 45,000 leading service stations. Atlas tires, all built with the strength of Atlas.
You're hot, dry, your little throat is parched. Wet it down with Nestea, all the way down.
Nestea, iced tea.
Here comes 100% tea, ready in an instant. Crisp, clear, never cloudy. Nestea even comes already lemoned and sugared. Look out, thirst. Here comes refreshment.
Nestea, iced tea.
Take the plunge.
The government said today that industrial production last month rose at the slowest rate in almost a year. That could be an indication that the economy may be cooling off, and that's what the administration wants as part of its drive against inflation. On the second day of President Nixon's 2-month price freeze, there were these developments. Some companies took back planned price increases. Others studied the situation, and still others are expected to roll some prices back. The stock markets closed out the week badly in very light trading. The Dow Jones Industrials were off more than 14 points. On the New York Exchange, the average price of a share fell 47 cents. On the American Exchange, the average price of a share lost 8 cents. A tornado struck northeast of Tampa, Florida today, and tornado watches were posted for parts of Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, Minnesota, Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. The tornado season is almost over, but this year their number set a record, almost 800. And while they did a great deal of damage, they killed fewer people. Steve Delaney has the story.
This is the most awesome wind in the world. A building in the path of a hurricane will probably survive. The same building in the path of a full-scale tornado will probably not. Normally, tornadoes kill about 120 people a year. This year, there have been more tornadoes than ever before, about half again as many as the old record. Most of them are smaller than this. Most of them don't hit towns. But when a big one does, the damage is appalling.
2 or 3 tornadoes hit Jonesboro, Arkansas on the 28th of May. They damaged about half the buildings in this community of 26,000 people. But in spite of the severity of the storm, nobody was killed by the tornado in Jonesboro. In spite of the fact that there have been so many more tornadoes this year than usual, the death toll is down, and the National Weather Service believes that its efforts to spot these storms before they occur and to warn people are becoming more successful. There are more than 100 weather radars like this around the country. Their readings, along with the observations from more than 500 weather stations in the U.S., are fed into the National Severe Storms Forecast Center in Kansas City.
We're just trying to predict the occurrence of tornadoes or severe thunderstorms anywhere in the United States. We're making extensive use of satellites, of course. We're concentrating on catching the big tornado, the one that has the capability of producing widespread death and destruction, and pretty much ignoring the little one.
The information is computerized, is analyzed, and scanned for the unsettled conditions which produce severe storms and tornadoes.
Report from Fort Worth, Texas. Severe thunderstorm was indicated by radar 25 miles south of Abilene. 3/4 inch hail was reported in this thunderstorm near Clyde, Texas.
When those conditions exist, most often in late spring and early summer, Kansas City triggers the alert system. There is no technology to prevent a tornado, but with advanced warnings, there's time for precautions. And more precautions mean fewer deaths. And that is the encouraging note in this record year for tornadoes. Steve Delaney, NBC News.
The Environmental Protection Agency said today it's found high concentrations of asbestos fiber in the drinking water of Duluth, Minnesota, and other Minnesota towns on the shore of Lake Superior. The agency advised parents of very young children to find another source of drinking water. Asbestos fiber is said to be linked to cancer. It's a popular myth that New York City is made up of heartless criminals, innocent victims, and uncaring bystanders. That is not necessarily true. Last night, three heartless criminals knocked a man down, grabbed the pocketbook of his female companion, and jumped into a taxi cab. A lot of bystanders watched this, but instead of being uncaring, about 50 people surrounded the cab and kept it from moving until the police arrived. New York may not be Fun City, but it's still a place where people care, once in a while at least.
Do you believe what they put in that sandwich? I never tasted anything like that. You? Oh, what a heartburn. I need some Alka-Seltzer. You?
When you have these upsets, Alka-Seltzer will neutralize the acid in your stomach and relieve your headache, too.
Hey, I feel pretty good now. You?
I'm Bart Starr, and I believe in a basic conservative game.
And I'm Paul Harning, and I believe in a little razzle-dazzle.
I think you should always be in shape.
And I've been known to paint the town red.
Take Bart Starr's advice. Behave yourself.
Take Paul Harning's advice. Enjoy yourself.
Jockey brand underwear.
The choice is yours.
Behave yourself.
Enjoy.
Behave.
Enjoy.
Behave.
Enjoy.
In 1954, 19 years ago, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled in a case called Brown versus Board of Education, and that ruling changed the history of this country. That was the famous desegregation decision, which said that separate but equal school facilities were not, in fact, equal, 19 years ago. And yet, as Fred Briggs reports from Chicago, there are black children whose lives have not been touched by this famous decision.
Cynthia Moten is 18. She was born a year after the Supreme Court made its landmark school decision, which ordered desegregation with all deliberate speed. Last night, she graduated from Hirsch High School, the end of 12 years in the Chicago school system. And not once in that time did she ever share a classroom with a white student. Cynthia was born and raised on the South Side, an area that is largely black. Her segregated education isn't unusual. Almost half of Chicago's grade schools are virtually all black. In the words of one of Cynthia's teachers, integration just hasn't worked here. Statistics generally show that black schools are inferior to white schools. The Chicago Urban League says about half of the first graders in black schools have failed a simple ready-to-learn test. Chicago schools in general get poor marks. Half of the students lag about 2 years behind the national average in reading, math, and general achievement. The gap is even worse in black schools. Once it was felt that integration would change all of this, but there's been some backing away from that in recent years. Many black groups are now saying it's more important to have black schools under black control, to improve the schools, not integrate them. Cynthia Moten would not disagree with that entirely, but she does wonder how it would have been going to school with whites.
If I could have started all over, I would go to school with whites because it's too much violence with blacks and whites not really understanding each other. I would, you know, if I could start all over, I would go to a school with blacks and whites.
Cynthia Moten.
When Cynthia and her classmates got their diplomas last night, there was little awareness that the Supreme Court had called for integrated schools a year before they were born. There was awareness that integration hasn't happened at their school or at thousands of other schools like it. 19 years ago, the court called for desegregation with all deliberate speed. 19 years later, the city of Chicago and the federal government are still arguing about how to desegregate and who should pay for it. Fred Briggs, NBC News, Chicago.
The pattern of segregated education is now an urban pattern, a big city pattern. Where there are large numbers of black people, there are still segregated schools, which means that 19 years after the Supreme Court decision, there is more educational segregation in the North than in the South. Good night for NBC News.